Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's Green Thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants, indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. See homedepot.com/delivery for details.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Scrum Down NBC Sports Rugby Podcast. I am your host with the most, Alex Corbusero, and it is great to be back, everyone. Lots going on in the rugby world, especially here on NBC Sports in America. The Rugby World Cup 2021 has kicked off. All games are available live and on demand with Peacock TV. I was in studio with Abby Gestidis this weekend. We covered the USA's result against Italy. Tough game for them. Strong first 20 minutes where they were able to go out and look like they had a strong chance of beating Italy, but just unable to convert their chances. A lot of frustration and disappointment in some of the missed opportunities. And then gotta credit the Italians and the clinicalness they showed in that game to come and get the win and sort of run away with it at the end and leave the United States without a bonus point. That makes qualification a lot more challenging for them. They have a big game coming up this weekend against Japan. That's available live in Peacock, and it airs at Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern Time on CNBC. Abby Gestidis and Lee Diffie will be covering that one. But that makes it a tougher road for the United States. As I said, no bonus point means they really need a big score against Japan. And that really, to definitely secure a place, have to get a win against Canada. If not, it's going to go down to mathematics and results elsewhere. So a lot of pressure on there. I thought the big three as such, and for me, which is England, New Zealand and France, look very, very strong. They're most likely one of the winners for me coming from one of those teams. I thought Canada played very well. It was against Japan. But on a whole, I think England showed that they're just a clear step above their decimation of Fiji. It was competitive for a while, but then the dam eventually burst. I thought France and the way they handled South Africa, you know, they look a very strong side. And, you know, Italy can take some beating. I think US showed that they can hold possession and be in the right areas, but I think Italy's grit in defense in the 22 and also their ability to be clinical and score tries makes them a contender to at least get into the knockout stages, and then you never know what happens in Rugby World Cups. But on a whole, I think it was really exciting opening game. I thought New Zealand weathered some absolute adversity in that first 20 minutes against Australia. Looked like the game was going to be running away for them, but they were able to go out and find their groove and get to winning ways. They're going to have the game of their lives to beat, I think, in England in this competition. Being at home with time to build, they definitely have a back line and some threats that can really score tries, and that will take some stopping. But on a whole, I think the tournament was a big success for the opening weekend. Big crowd at Eden Park to kick it all off. It's an exciting one, and it's something that as the tournament keeps progressing, we'll cover a lot more on the Scrum Down. I think the other thing to keep an eye out in rugby world that we have on NBC right now is Premiership Rugby. It is popping off on the field in Premiership Rugby. It's at an all-time high for caliber of games. Exciting stuff across the weekend. You know, you had Bristol Bears losing a second one in a row, this time against Exeter, and they just didn't even look in the game, not close at all. Saracens continuing their winning ways. They beat Leicester last week, then another win this weekend over Newcastle. They are undefeated in the Premiership. And then really the story or the team that we got to start focusing on a bit is Sale Sharks. These guys undefeated as well, quietly going about their business, looking a potential real deal. And that's still without George Ford turning up as well. I thought that was an impressive win they had over Leicester on the weekend. And, you know, Leicester are defending champions, losing two in a row and starting to look, you know, maybe not the same consistency that we saw for them last year, where they went undefeated for at least 9-10 games at the Premiership. And that really gave them the buffer and the cushion at the top of the league. I think this league is going to be, again, down to the wire. I can't see anyone pulling away, but you're starting to see, you know, your top three of such, of Saracens, of Sale, and of Exeter looking probably the most consistent form sides at the moment. And, you know, with all the good stuff going on the field in the Premiership, it's really the bulk of this episode. And what we're going to talk about today is actually focusing on the off-field issues going on. Worcester Warriors, they have gone into administration. They are out of the Premiership. You know, lots to talk about there. Then we have Wasps on the brink of following suit. Lots going on in the press about them as well. And here to break it all down with myself, we have returning rugby writer for The Times, friend of the pod, Alex Lowe. Let's get into it. And we are joined by the returning Alex Lowe, back to the pod, rugby correspondent for the Times newspaper. And Alex, you know what that means. It means there's more off-field drama going on in the Premiership rugby world. Let's focus on Worcester first. Since we last spoke, a lot has happened. Obviously, the club has gone into administration. They've faced insolvency for the companies that were holding the club's, you know, rights, assets, plus the players' contracts. And that now has led to sort of, you know, the end of this current chapter of Worcester Warriors with you know, a lot to be decided going forward in the future.
Yeah, thanks for having me. The bad news correspondent is back on the pod. Yeah, so Worcester, since I last spoke, Worcester have been suspended from the Premiership for the rest of the season, relegated into the Championship for next season, providing they can find a new buyer, because they have no players and no staff under contract. As I think we've explained before, it was a really complicated set of companies that were set up by the owners. But to keep it simple, there was a company that owned the players' contracts that has been liquidated over an unpaid tax bill of £6 million. So the moment that happened, all the players and staff had no contracts. They were unemployed. The club itself sits in a different company, which is in administration, and the punishment for that is relegation. So as we stand, Worcester have no players, no staff, no place in the Premiership. They need a new buyer to come in to take over if they're going to take their place in the Championship next season. And they're still in an uncertainty around the club as to what will happen with what's called the P share. So the central share that the top 13 clubs have in the Premiership, which gives the clubs access to central funding, effectively their slice of the broadcast rights, their slice of what the RFU funding is down into the clubs. Without that central P share, even if Worcester are in the Championship next season, they would miss out on that roughly £4 million and instead receive about £160,000. So in an enormous difference. And what we hear is really the only hope that the club have of ever bouncing back is for the rest of the Premiership clubs to hold off and not buy that P share off them. But they fear that that's what will happen, because the other clubs will look at a fairly small commercial pie and go, well, let's divide it by 12 instead of 13. There's already talk about reducing the size of the league down from 13, which might have gone up to 14, actually down to 10 or even 8. So you're right, it's the end of the chapter for Worcester. The players are all now trying to find new clubs, and they've, one by one, they're doing so. So today we had Finn Smith, 20-year-old fly half, one of the real young, exciting players in England. He was always due to go to Northampton Saints next season, but he's now gone early. And actually, it'd be great for him because he'll spend the rest of this year with Dan Biggar, who, you know, the Wales captain, who's in his last year at Northampton. tonight, Ollie Lawrence has confirmed he signed a long-term deal with Bath, having joined there on loan initially. He's now joined there permanently. And the club are in conversation with Ted Hill, the Worcester captain, and others to try and sign them. So the players are trying to find an employment. The staff are trying to find employment. And the club, as it stands, that doesn't really exist, frankly, certainly for this season.
It's a sad chapter. And I guess, you know, we talked a bit before at length of how they got in this situation. But, you know, since it's happened and since we last spoken, there's been a lot of vocalization and frustration from players involved, from staff involved, and a lot of it directed at the current or at the previous owners or current owners. I'm not sure exactly what their title probably is at this point. And it's my question is, you know, how much of that do you think is just, and how much do you think that is just the inevitability of the fragility of the situation?
It's incredibly complicated what's been going on, and certainly for those of us who write on the sports pages, it's not the kind of area that we're normally experts in. I would advise anyone who wants all the detail of the labyrinth of companies and transactions that's gone on at Worcester Warriors to read an article written by Michael Aylwin in The Guardian. He spent 18 months, and that's how long it's taken him, to try and join the dots to understand exactly what's been happening behind the scenes at Worcester. There have been red flags along the way. There have been missed payments. They had a player who had to retire, and his medical bills were not paid. There have been moments along the way which have been a cause for concern. But it's taken 18 months for a journalist to piece this all together. One of the reasons that the fans and the staff and the players are so angry is because they feel that these red flags were there, but the governing body, the RFU, and the Premiership, although it's actually the RFU's responsibility given the structure of things, didn't get involved early enough, didn't apply enough scrutiny to what was going on, and sort of sat back and allowed this slow car crash to unfold. I'll give you one example without delving too deeply into the maze of transactions that went on, but the club was effectively bought on a sale and lease basis. So they bought it and immediately leased out the land for 999 years and used the money for the lease to buy the club. When the pandemic hit and the government made a £15.3 million loan to Worcester, which was intended to help keep the club afloat, about £10 million of that went on buying back that lease, buying back the virtual freehold of the Six-Way Stadium site. So it wasn't used to try and help keep the club afloat. It was used to cover off previous debts, effectively. And there are all sorts of other allegations being made about transactions and why those transactions happened. And that's what's taking the administrators so long to unpick. And it's certainly forcing the RFU now to review their processes to understand how they allowed these owners to come in and really how they allowed the club to go to the wall. To answer your specific question, there's all sorts of detail behind the scenes that's trying to be unravelled at the moment. And Michael Aylwin has done a brilliant job. But it took me about five reads to get to the end of it because there's so much detail and so many complicated transactions that have gone on behind the scenes here, but ultimately it's led to if not the death of the club, there's certainly in hiatus right now, and without a buyer then it will be the death of the club.
And when you look at, you know, some of the finances in that article, one thing that stood out to me was even the reluctancy of the owners near the end to really like change tact and you know, accept the sort of fate and potentially do what's best for the club. One of the examples was, you know, the players' wages bill that partially was paid out, that 600 and something thousand payment was basically loaned from another company they had, which I believe is the one that had the car park rights or whatever offset to it. And instead of that loan, there was an offer from a creditor to Sport England, who was willing to pay the full 700 and something thousand wage bill on a loan that had no interest or no payback at all attached to it, which obviously would be better in the long-term interest of the club, seeing it where they are financially. And yet the owners sort of, you know, still resisted that and stuck with the loan that they were basically getting interest off themselves. And it just seems like, you know, mismanagement and the RFU, like their Premiership Rugby, there's got to be some accountability and lessons learned from this from the future, because it's an absolute travesty. You know, it's heartbreaking to see players, fans, staff dislodged, but also for the game on a whole and the aspects of trying to grow the product, the brand, the company, the sport. It's just a tarnish right now, which could have been so not easily avoided, but definitely avoided or mitigated to an enormous extent from where it's landed right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many points that you're right about. I've spoken to that creditor who told me exactly that they had offered to cover off the salaries and to try and fund the club through this crisis, and we're told thank you, but we don't need it because we've got a deal that we're just about to do. Now that line, the line that these owners were, you know, days away from striking a deal was repeated so many times that the authorities are now having to investigate whether they ever had any intention of selling the club, any intention of striking a rescue deal with an investor. Because if they did, why didn't they reach those deals? And the fear, therefore, is, was their intention always to try and profit from the land and to hell with the rugby club? And that's what's being investigated, I believe, within the RFU and within the authorities. Certainly, rugby governance has failed Worcester here. It has shown up the systems in England as being unfit for purpose. I know that there are executives at Premiership Rugby who were desperate to try and take action. They could see where this was going. But weirdly, the way that the governance structures are set up, the executives who effectively run the league had no authority to step in and do anything. Because the way that the Premiership is set up, all decisions have to be effectively made by all the clubs. And the chairman and the chief executive, when they took those jobs a year ago, one of the things they said from the outset was, we need power. We need to be able to act quickly and make decisions for the good of the league. But it hasn't happened yet. And so they were sitting unable to act. The authorities sat with the RFU, who were alerted to concerns around one of the owners who's no longer allowed to practice as a solicitor. That was a pretty major red flag. And all the RFU did at the time was to go, well, we'll look into that, but we'll allow that owner time to help, you know, save the club. How much of a mistake was that? You know, if they're looking into whether there was ever an intention to save the club, then that was a mistake. There's a lot of questions being asked about the governance here in England, and you're right, this has to be used as a catalyst now, a trigger to modernise the governance of English rugby. And I think I may have said to you before, when this first began to happen with Worcester, Bill Sweeney, the chief exec of the RFU, issued a statement. He hasn't spoken publicly about this. He hasn't answered any questions on it. He issued a statement, all of which was spot on, actually, apart from one line in it, which said, well, of course, rugby's still a very young professional sport, as if to excuse mistakes, because it was through naivety. Yeah. This is an enormous sport. It's a big corporate business. You can't explain these mistakes away through the naivety of youth, which is what they were trying to do. It would be better to have just said, this sport needed to have evolved its processes a long time before now. Acknowledge that, because that's what we can all see. And from this moment onwards, it's got to change.
Honestly, completely agree. Like, I think, you know, there can't be this, you know, crutch or, you know, ability to sort of dodge the issues that we're in right now by putting it to an infancy of a professional sport. We are well down the lines, well past that. There's big term investment money in rugby across the board, especially even at the Premiership level. Like, it's just, it's a non-starter for me there. But let's just finish this Worcester Warriors sort of roundup. And one of the things that we haven't touched on but came out in the news since was the actual apology. I put that in quotes with my fingers for those listening, that the owners sort of released publicly. And I believe that was under, you know, pressure from people like Ted Hill, who you know, felt like they deserved, them and the staff and everyone deserved an apology from the owners. But what came out from the owners was a bit of a disgrace, as a lot of people have been outraged about it. But basically, it was a complete continuation of the lack of accountability. There was blame shed on players for not taking pay cuts during, or not being willing to take pay cuts during the pandemic. There were issues on, you know, them not winning enough games, issues like raised or excuse or buts as such raised by the owners as well on not enough fans turning up in attendance. Like, it really was like the icing onto the cake of all the havoc and, you know, sort of malevolent behavior that has been sort of, you know, at least insinuated from people looking at this situation. It just seemed to be, you know, the icing on top of that and the last nail in the coffin for sort of public resentment to truly turn on the owners and them to face sort of the brunt of accountability and backlash for this situation.
Yeah, completely. It was a staggering statement. And talking to players and staff at Worcester through this process, they had been describing the contempt they felt that the owners had for them and for the club, really. The way that the lack of communication, the broken promises, the lies that they felt they had been told all the way through this whole process. And that statement just summed up the contempt that those two men clearly had for the club and for the people involved and the lives that have been affected. There wasn't a hint of responsibility within that statement. Everything was, it was sarcastic. And it was pointing the finger of blame everywhere else apart from at their own doorstep. And you know, and if anything, throughout this process, epitomised how they were the wrong people to be owning a rugby club and how much of a mistake it was for the RFU to ever endorse their ownership or their directorship of a club. That statement was it. It was a disgrace. It was an abdication of responsibility. And worse than that, it pinned the blame on people who'd been working for free to try and keep the club going, to players who weren't sure if they were being paid from one month to the next, at fans. You know, it's not the biggest supported club in the Premiership. But you can't blame the fans for mismanagement of the rugby club. That's just... That was just kind of the pits, really, and the outpouring of anger that generated across the league, not just within Worcester and within the players and employees of the club, but across the Premiership and across the rugby community. Just I guess it summed up really the depths that this story has reached. And you said in something previously just now about, you know, that I'm, you know, we joke, I come on when there's bad news, but there's so much wonderful rugby that you'll be talking about on this pod that's happening, and yet the name of the sport and the image of the sport is being dragged down. And statements like that just do our game such a disservice.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
And let's get back to some of the players. Like we talked about, some of the big name or more higher profile players are finding homes in clubs. But, you know, more of your brick and mortar of your squad, your squad players as such, you know, week in, week out, strong club players, they're the ones who are really going to struggle right now and struggle to find, you know, a home in this league. You know, is there any talk of salary cap being raised potentially to allow these players to find homes? Is there an alternative? And then the follow-up question from that as well is if, say, Worcester Warriors is eventually rescued from administration or whatever and it finds a way to compete in the championship next year, how are they going to start from complete scratch and put a whole squad and a team together? Like, is that even feasible now that you're losing this? Is there a chance that once they are rescued, the bulk of that squad gets retained in some way for next season?
There's got to be a hope that that's what will happen. So they bought themselves. One of the reasons for suspending them from the Premiership this season was, you know, they couldn't, the business isn't functioning. But it also buys them time to find a buyer and to then recruit a squad and start again. Now, you're right. The RFU have promised to look after the academy to ensure that the pathway that is connected to Worcester Warriors continues. So they've promised to look after the kids up, you know, up to those on the brink of signing pro terms. And we've talked about the star players, that, you know, the Rory Sutherland and Duane van der Merwe, the British and Irish Lions, they're okay. England internationals, they'll be okay. Finn Smith, he's okay. And the kids are going to be okay. But it's that chunk of players in the middle, those players who, and Worcester have a lot of them, kind of really important club players. Cameron Neal, signed by Steve Diamond from Sale Sharks, you know, a classic Premiership warrior, you know, not an international standard player, but absolutely the critical to helping any Premiership club win games and challenge for trophies. Someone like him, where does he go? Because it's not just a salary cap thing, that there isn't talk of salary cap dispensation. Mainly because most of the clubs want the salary cap to stay the level it is because they can't afford to pay anymore. So these players are being signed on smaller contracts than they would have been on at Worcester, just to fit in as within the salary cap as injury dispensation signings. Or there are ways of doing it, but it's not just the cap; it's budgets. You know, Newcastle Falcons operate a budget lower than the salary cap, so they've got room to sign players, but they haven't got the money to sign them. So the hope has to be that the administrator can untangle this mess, that the P share is retained by Worcester so that they can be a going entity next season and re-sign a lot of these players. But without the P share, they might as well just merge Worcester Warriors with the amateur Worcester Rugby Club, which is what happened to London Welsh when they went bankrupt from the Championship. Instead of moving London Welsh down a league, they just folded the professional team and everything went into the amateur team. And that's where this Worcester could end up. And if they do, then those players, that middle group of players we've talked about, won't have anywhere to play because squads are small. Squads in the Premiership are small.
Well, I think, you know, we kind of rounded up, you know, one sad story as such with Worcester right now. And that's a good way to transition to, you know, the next team that seems to be on the potential chopping block or brink of similar fate to Worcester. And that is Wasps. And, you know, this is an ever-evolving story. But, you know, they are slowly running out of time for, you know, to find the 2 million quid in a sustainable business plan or investment group to get out of the situation they're in. What is the latest with WAS right now?
So they really have this week to secure that the £2 million would fend off the tax man. They were in the same as Worcester. The Inland Revenue came calling for an unpaid tax bill. That's what they need the money for. But that isn't the main issue here. Beyond that, they took out a £35 million bond when they moved from London to Coventry, and that was due to be repaid in May, and they couldn't afford it. That needs to be refinanced. The situations are very different. So WASPs nearly went bust in 2012. They were saved, and then in 2014 the club moved from London. They played their games at in High Wycombe, which is near London, and they moved to Coventry. And they did that because if they'd stayed where they were, they would have gone bust. So it was a desperate business attempt to keep WASPs afloat by propping up the rugby club with a wider business. The stadium they play at has a casino and a hotel, conferencing facilities. Harry Styles is playing a gig there next summer. The Arctic Monkeys are playing there. It's a hub, but of course that hub was silent and shut through the pandemic. So the difference with WASPs to Worcester is how they've got to this point, but they're now at the same point. They've got this week really to secure a buyer, or at the very least to find the money to stave off the winding up order. And now we're hearing there are different offers on the table for investment. Some are to buy the stadium with WASPs, and some are to just interested in the stadium. And if that was to happen, then who's protecting WASPs' interests? What happens to one of the founding clubs, you know, 155-year-old rugby club here, at risk if new investors don't take on the club with the rest of the assets? There's one takeover bid on the table, and they're receiving advice from a former chief executive of the club, a guy called David Armstrong, and he is advising a potential bid to buy the stadium with the club. My understanding from talking to people around the deal is that, not dissimilar to Worcester, the issue of relegation is massive. They go into administration, which seems very likely right now, because some of these bids will only buy the club out of administration. It reduces the debts that they would have. So relegation is a massive issue. And again, the P share. If they don't have a P share, and if they're going to get relegated, they're a less attractive prospect to any buyer. So WASPs, former English champions, former European champions, one of the great names in English and European rugby, you'd say, with Leicester Tigers and Bath, certainly in England, they are on the brink. There is hope because there is interest, but if the interest ultimately is only to buy the wider business and not to support the club, then it's dark times. So we've got really till the middle of next week, I'd say, for WASPs to find the rescue package they need to keep them as a Premiership club and to keep them going.
And it seems there's, you know, been quite a strong sort of media campaign to push that message with WAS. Like, you know, with Worcester, there was a lot of calls, mismanagement, you know, that seemed to be the way that a lot of the sentiment was going, from, you know, MP members to press articles to, you know, social media. But with WAS, there seems to be a concerted effort from, you know, stakeholders, but even like Lawrence Dallaglio, who's come under a lot of fire for his comments on BT Sport this week, really pushing the fact that it wasn't WAS' fault. This is all due to the pandemic, and that relegation should be taken off the table. And I think what Lawrence probably said the most that stirred people up was kind of using what you've just said about the brand of WAS, its heritage, its place in the Premiership, that it's too big to sort of fit to face the same fate of Worcester. And that seems to have angered a lot of people, especially people at Worcester and even people at Saracens who had their club relegated and had to go all through that. Like, why should Wasps be treated any differently in this scenario?
Well, they shouldn't be, and they won't be. Premiership Rugby tonight have confirmed that Wasps will have to be subject to the same rules and regulations as Worcester Warriors. Where Lawrence was coming from, I believe, was not... I don't think he meant we're too big to go down, we're too big to be punished. I think what he was really trying to get to was if the Premiership can step in and assist Wasps with some by providing some assurances, then the club is more likely to be saved. Because, as I said, they're a much more attractive prospect if they've got their P share, their central share, the slice of that central funding. And if they can retain their status as a Premiership club, I think he was trying to say they're more likely to be saved, which may well be the truth. But you can't treat them differently to Worcester, no matter how grand their history is. They're all 13 shareholding members of the same organisation. And Premiership Rugby have said as much tonight. So it is a campaign in the sense that they are, and there was a line in the story that first broke about the takeover that David Armstrong, the former chief exec, is advising in. There was a line in there that said they had already approached the RFU to request that the club not be condemned to relegation if they could guarantee to buy them out of administration. So the two to me seem connected. There's a definite attempt to say this club could be saved, but we need some help and some assurances to allow us to do that. I understand where they're coming from, but the rules are the rules and Wasps won't be treated any differently to Worcester.
No, man, I completely agree. I do feel like if you're going to treat Worcester that way and they've already... Because look at Worcester's point of view. They would have said, well, if we could keep our P share and not had the spectre of relegation and everything lingering over us, we might have found an easier way out of our situation too. And, you know, why should we be treated differently than Wasps?
I was at Wasps on Sunday and... They said there were 10,000 fans there. There must have been a lot in the stand that I was in because it didn't feel like there were 10,000 there. And there was a definite air of, blimey, this could be the last home game that Wasps play. Now, we hope it doesn't come to that. And I guess to connect to your wider pod, Wasps lost an absolute thriller of a game in the last play. They overcame enormous hurdles, losing some of their best players to injuries through the game. They lost a man sent off and then Northampton pip it at the end. But the heart and the spirit, like Wasps has been a club that's always been about, I wrote this in my match report, it's always been about heart and soul more than bricks and mortar. It's never really had a home. The training ground when they were in London was ropey, but they sort of prided themselves on that. They didn't need a glamour training base. It didn't need a glitzy stadium because it was about the people. And what you saw in that squad on Sunday, epitomised, I thought, by Jack Willis, who is playing some extraordinary rugby at the moment, was a squad who fought through the adversity of everything that's going on and the uncertainty and the adversity on the field to get within the brink of winning an extraordinary game. And in the end, they lost it. They were spent physically and emotionally, but I thought you saw on the field, led by Jack Willis, this everything that really epitomises what Wasps is. The fact it's about them, it's about the people, it's about the heart and soul, and they'll go and play wherever. You know, they're playing in the Coventry Building Society Arena now. They played in High Wycombe before. They played at Queen's Park Rangers Football Club before that. They'll play wherever, but it's about the people, and that's what is. What's at risk here with Wasps is you know, they don't really care, frankly, I don't think, about the size of the stadium they play in, because that's never been what that club is about. It's unique. It's about the people. And that's what really has to be preserved somehow at Wasps, because, and, you know, Jack Willis was there flying the flag, just a brilliant player and a brilliant bloke who really epitomised, who's come through the academy and like Lawrence Dallaglio did when he played, really epitomised that sense of what the club is about and who they are. And that's what's at risk here. And that's what's so sad about it.
No, definitely. And I think, you know, if you look at WAS, do you think, you know, say it goes worst case scenario and you know, the club, you know, aren't able to find a buyer, it goes in administration, you know, they lose the stadium bought off by whoever else. Do you ever see them leaving the Midlands, returning to London, you know, rejigging again their catchment area? Or do you think this is a permanent fixture for WAS forever, that the Midlands is now their home and that's them regardless?
I'd say it's a permanent fixture for the professional team, but Wasps amateurs still play in West London. So it depends how bad things get. If Wasps can get a buyer and reappear in the Championship, or and this is a whole other conversation, but there's a real urgency now to restructure the whole Premiership, and maybe there's a way to bridge Premiership with Championship, because the gap between the Premiership and the Championship is too big. Both financially and in terms of quality. There's conversations about restructuring it, and that could include effectively a Premiership 2. So you have a smaller top division, you have a Premiership 2, and including the best of the Championship. Now, if Wasps could reappear next season in the Championship or in Premiership 2, however, I think maybe next season might be a bit too quick for that whole structure, but I'm telling you, there is a real urgency to get that done. Then if they continue as a professional outfit, I think they'll probably stay where they are. They're not massively loved in Coventry. Coventry Rugby Club is a very historic club itself. Coventry City Football Club, who they now share the stadium with, spent years having to play somewhere else. They're not massively loved in the city. But I think if they remain a professional entity, that's where they'll stay. If it was to collapse altogether, the Wasps amateur team run a thriving junior section that they still exist in West London. But well, you know, we just have to hope that it doesn't get that bad, that the pros end up merging with the amateurs.
You know, we talked about potentially shrinking the league down to 10 or whatever it goes. And you know, some clubs in this league are in more advantageous positions than others. But say with Worcester or Wasps and, you know, them struggling as such. In the Midlands, you've got Northampton Saints, much more financially secure. You've got Leicester Tigers, much more financially secure. Is there any way that those clubs could potentially make a play to almost incorporate assets? Maybe not like you sell off stadium assets, you pay off debts or creditors through property, but actually incorporating, you know, either players, staff, the rights to almost kind of expand your fan base. So instead of, you know, selling 10,000 tickets, you get 17,000 because you've now sort of looped in your 7,000 sort of average Worcester Warrior fans each week into your team, and you're sort of amalgamating it into a new model that way.
There was a proposal maybe 6 weeks or so ago that Wasps and Worcester should merge. It was dismissed very quickly, and I don't believe that's going to happen for a number of reasons, but it was floated and it won't happen. What Wasps are trying to do is carve out fans in the Coventry locality. Up the road, Leicester sell out every week. Northampton Saints sell out a lot. You know, they're getting 14,000-15,000 regularly. Wasps aren't eating into their catchment area, I don't think. If you're brutal about it, I suspect Leicester and Northampton are sitting there waiting to see which players are available. Because we talk about the big names going from Worcester, there are maybe a handful of them, realistically. Wasps have a squad pack full of either established stars or up-and-coming players like Charlie Atkinson, that fly half. They've got a lot of rich talent there. And as it stands right now, the Premiership is... And it's one of the things that Steve Diamond at Sale has been very critical of. He believes that all the messages of support from around the Premiership have been disingenuous. He thinks they're all sitting back waiting for Worcester to fold so they can pick off their players and then increase their own share of the central funding. And you've got to, you know, it's a cutthroat business.
It's probably
right. Yeah, and it's what's happening. And at the moment, there's no it's not like we've, as we discussed, it's not like the NFL where everything is centralized. They're all individual businesses trying to win and trying to make their own business a success. And that's where this wider conversation about actually what's best for the league needs to come in. But I'm certain that if the worst was to happen at Wasps, they've got so many players who they got some England players, but they, like Jack Willis, superstar, really, I think, but so many players who are incredibly valuable to a Premiership team because they are just on the outskirts of an England call up. You know, guys who've been in England camp who don't play for England, that means that they are the very best of the next tier down, but they're also available for every game. They don't disappear on international duty, and that's really valuable to any club who wants to win the Premiership. So I don't think there's an enormous amount of solidarity around the league to help support Wasps through it.
No, mate. Well, I think that's a good place to wrap this one up. And I guess, you know, I feel like we'll be speaking again on all these topics. I don't feel like it's going to settle itself or go away anytime soon. And I guess
get me on to talk about something fun
what the
next
future
time,
entails. Yeah, I'll try, mate. I'll try. The Grim Reaper is such. You keep coming around when the bad news is here. But Alex, mate, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for your insight as always. And, you know, like I just said, I'm pretty sure we'll speak pretty soon again.
Yeah, I'll catch you soon, Alex. Cheers.
Well, that is a wrap on this week's show. Thank you again to Alex for coming on. Guy with his finger on the pulse of all these news stories as they're breaking. You know, tough to spend the episode talking about that when there's so much positive stuff going on the field in the Premiership. It really is the best on-field product the league's ever had, and it's going to be a competitive running down to the wire, and hopefully eventually we can put some of these stories to bed and get back to talking more about the on-field. And it's the same with the Rugby World Cup 2021 from New Zealand. We'll be looking to get more guests on, more insight, more breakdown to that as we go forward in the next month or so. And then again, just to touch on, sorry to all our fans outside of the US last week who couldn't watch the show on YouTube, couldn't see the brand new studio. You know, unfortunately, you know, we used a lot of game footage in that of London Irish from the Premiership, and that meant that it had to be a geo block. We've not done that this week, so it should be back up and running for all of you there. And just again, a big thank you for our continued support of the Scrum Down, and a reminder to keep liking, favoriting, sharing, retweeting, telling your friends about the pod. We really appreciate the support. That's all from us this week, and we'll see you again next week.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
From muddy jungle paths to snowy trails to rolling sand dunes, the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder is ready to take you to some of the most phenomenal destinations on Earth. In a Pathfinder, it's more than just the arrival. The real excitement comes from the ride to get there. With 7 drive modes, Pathfinder's available intelligent 4-wheel drive is built for some of the most epic journeys. So chase bigger, better, more exciting adventures in the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. Intelligent 4-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.